XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. I'm laughing because Case adjusted the audio from his end, and the minute the intro was coming up, I was reaching for my board. But Case, thank you. You adjusted it for me. I thought it was me. A very good Tuesday, everybody. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website. A little bit more wetness coming through, and looking ahead for Thursday. In fact, not that we're done wrapping up Derby Oaks, but am starting to get interested in that $50,000 pick six carryover at Belmont on Thursday. Second carryover. This thing's going to work, obviously. Second carryover since the start of the meet. And I know we're going to talk to Nick. We'll get Nick Tamaro's post Derby Oaks recapping. We got one of those to do as well with Paul Matisse, as we do virtually every year. And I think yesterday's opening salvos, including Andy Beyer, a very animated Andy Beyer. I think hitting the Derby obviously sat well with Andy. No, he was great. And this morning I actually put out a couple of different things that feed into the discussion we had with Andy yesterday. And as he mentioned, he didn't even know that there was any consternation over the Pat Day Mile figure until I brought it up with him ahead of the visit. And his explainer was really good. I put up the two incremental pace charts from Formulator. And, you know, for those of you that haven't availed yourself of that innovation in the past, it's probably almost a year now. The way in which the DRFPPs are formatted, you know, now is much more interactive, and particularly going back afterward, the charting that is available live, you know, a much more animated chart, and you've got those various drop down options, including the incremental pace. And I'm sure some of you are saying, what do I mean? Go back to Saturday, for instance, and, you know, click on any of the, you know, the races from Saturday, and, you know, you'll see the mutual prices are listed first, and, you know, then basically it looks like a regular chart, but there's that menu that goes across, and the first thing you see is the standard chart being highlighted. And then it says next race, buyer figures, incremental pace, elapsed pace, DRF comments, and form notes. That incremental pace chart, when you click on that, it is invaluable, and it gives you the breakdown of each horse at each point of call. And, you know, there's tremendous information to be gleaned. Then you fold in, and one of the first things I did this morning, too, was put up a kind of a subtweeting of Marshall Graham's Trackus information from Saturday. And Marshall focused on the Derby. And he took the Trackus information and shows you the pace, not the pace adjusted, but the distance adjusted, you know, what the time was. And basically extrapolates everybody's time, everybody's race, based on the distance that they covered. And under that setting, under that interpretation, essential quality with the ground loss ran the, you know, the best race, quote unquote. But there's so much to learn. We dissect the Derby, tremendously, but it's just as important with all the other races. And so I put up, in addition to the incremental pace to compare to the elapsed, ground loss chart that Marshall put up, I put up side by side the Pat Day Mile and the Derby City distaff, because the people that didn't understand right away why a 91 in the Pat Day Mile for Jackie's Warrior and a 99 for Gamine in the Derby City distaff, and it's not hard to see when you look at the final quarter or the final eighth in the case of a 7-furlong race, and you can look at the final 3/8 really of Gamine. You can see it in numerically. It's much more evident. And yes, the Pat Day Mile performance, it was so courageous and spectacular. Steve Asmussen will join us in about a half an hour, but they slowed tremendously in the final quarter, and so when I saw some people say, "Oh, the Jackie's Warrior ran just as fast as Gamine for 6 or 6.5 furlongs, or even 7 furlongs," but that doesn't matter. As Andy said, if you missed Andy yesterday, or if you heard, maybe you heard it on the replay this morning, it's the final time, and I don't want to say they quote unquote crawled home. But they came home in more than 26 seconds for the final quarter. That tells you a lot. you have to understand. So, that was a fast early, slow late. And if you wanted to break it up, it was moderate in the middle of the third quarter. They went in 24 and change. But avail yourself of this tool. Give you specifics. Jackie's Warrior, 21-3, 21-4, then 24-1, and 26-2. All right, that's the mile. Gamine, 23-flat, 22-4. 23-1, and then home in 12-1. So 35-2 for the last 3/8. You see the difference between that performance and what was happening in the Pat Day Mile. And there's a lot going on. Going back to the Derby for a minute on this, and we'll certainly talk more about it, I would think, with Nick, particularly. Actually, Andy Serling today, too. Andy's going to be on early today at 10 instead of 11. The performance down the chart that stands out from this, from this kind of analysis, beside essential quality with the ground loss, is also Midnight Bourbon. And we'll see from Steve Asmussen this morning what the status is. I mean, there's probably a couple more days of decision making, and the Derby horses back on track probably today. A lot of them will probably just walked on Sunday and maybe jogged yesterday, and pretty much resumed training on the third day. So we'll get an update from Steve on where things stand with Midnight Bourbon, but Mike Smith was really passive in the early stages with a horse that had a better chance had he been involved from you know, closer to the outset. Also on that topic about being involved from the outset, a lot of haranguing and carrying on over Joel Rosario losing an iron. And Ron Anderson is going to join us in just a few minutes, actually, just 5 or 6 or 7 minutes. So we'll talk to Ron, and Ron will give you the specifics. And if you haven't seen particularly the head-on, there's a it took me a while, actually, to find a nice, clear visual of the head-on to watch about half a dozen times. And, you know, considering a 19-horse field, you know, there really wasn't a lot of early problems other than Rock Your World, you know, being, you know, one step slow and then squeezed and shuffled back. And Ron will get Ron's take on it. And I also want to let Ron riff on everything else that went on over the weekend. Obviously, a very special. You heard Johnny V with us yesterday, and obviously a remarkable accomplishment for Ron and Johnny, the way things unfolded. And, you know, for I brought it up actually with Todd Pletcher too, you know, that, you know, here's John Velasquez, you know, with a new kind of a new relationship, riding for Bob Baffert and winning back-to-back derbies, and on Friday in the Oaks, winning for his, you know, his very close association, and probably tomorrow at 11 a.m. His mutual Hall of Fame member in Todd Pletcher. So and it's good for Johnny too, because, you know, here's Baffert with the quips yesterday, with a couple of good ones between the sport coat costing more than the horse, and Johnny being more tired than Medina Spirit. Gary Young is going to visit this morning as well. We'll start the second half of the show with Gary, and we'll get the I would imagine now a more rested and clear-headed Gary Young chance to congratulate him, and, you know, to really hear his reflections on, I don't want to say career-topping day, because that would, you know, that would probably not be appropriate. The chances are, you know, Gary could have a day. I don't know. I guess he'd have to win. I guess he'd have to win multiple Breeders' Cup races, or on a Cup weekend, or I don't know. It might not be. We'll see. We'll see what he thinks. We'll ask him point blank. Can, you know, will anything top this? So, Gary Young. Brad Cox in hour three, as promised, and also got room for a little bit more. So, another, you know, day two of recapping. And while we have a window, and before I have Case reach out and bring Ron in, I didn't finish the rundown on the big four winners. And I mentioned Elliot Clegg. You heard that. Elliot amassed 5480. In earnings with those the three winners that he had, and Andrew Martino, who, you know, I mentioned only two players out of 253 got both of the first day winners, Andrew Martino and Chris Ahl, and then Andrew added Jackie's Warrior. Elliot was able to get Obligatory, Jackie's Warrior, and Du Jour. So he got the last three. Andrew got the first three, and Elliot the last three. And so Andrew's total was 5240. So Elliot the winner. And then Maggie Kimmett. I don't think I mentioned Maggie's name yesterday. And Maggie, so well known to everybody in the Maryland and the Mid-Atlantic region with her work with the Motions and at Herring Swell. And Maggie was tickled as could be to win. She said she never wins anything. She was third, 48-20, and Chris Al ends up fourth with 45-80. So the four winners, and we ended up, you know, because it was really so close in essence, Elliot wins $400, Andrew wins $300, Maggie $200, and Chris $100. So thanks to Form to Win for putting up $1,000 in prize money and the great real quick response. And people, I think, really enjoyed this. So we're going to do more of these, more Bic Fours. and thanks also to Gatman, our web dev team, John Gattuso in South Florida, who, you know, has managed the website, you know, from day one, and, you know, did the redesign a few years ago, and under duress twice now in the last 7 or 8 months, Breeders' Cup, when we put together the Breeders' Cup wagering companion in literally, I don't know, 36 hours, and the same thing here when this idea popped up, Tuesday. And by Wednesday, they were working on it, and Thursday, it was working. So there it was. And so now we have a format, and we'll do it more. And it also, it was interesting to see the crowdsourcing information. You know, they put graphs up about the selections. And obviously, Aunt Pearl, for instance, in the Edgewood. And we'll talk to Brad Cox in hour three about her bleeding. Liz Crow letting it be known after the race that she had bled a 3, you know, the scale of EIPH incident is rated 1 through 5, and she bled a 3. So we'll get an update from Brad on Aunt Pearl. But I can tell you that what's interesting is that going into the race, there had been, you know, information out there, and we included it in discussion, that, and it came actually from Derby Trail, from one of a really knowledgeable West Coast poster, that said, you know, no seasonal debut has won in the Edgewood. Not an easy race to win first off the bench. And that, you know, that should be filed away. And, you know, it shouldn't come as a surprise, really. You know, a mile and a 16th. I mean, that's a demanding, you know, it's a demanding way to debut your season. So, you know, being open to, you know, to other players in there was obviously key, as I mentioned yesterday. And, you know, gift list ends up being your winner, but I also thought that Cherie DeVoe Postnup was okay in there. I used all three to get things started, and, you know, in the pick five, and it was the second leg already of the pick six on Friday. So there we go. There's a few of the tidbits. A couple other things. The Preakness. Looking ahead a little bit, we got most of the opportunity anyway to to hear from the horsemen that are going to be involved. You knew that Todd's Derby runners weren't going to be all that interested, but he certainly did seem like he and Rick Nichols are giving serious consideration to Malathat for the Belmont. But Baffert, after he got off the air with us, and he had mentioned to you that there was going to be a work for concert tour, and then he gave the thumbs up after that, and concert tour confirmed. We'll talk to Brad Cox about where he stands. Obviously, Caddo River was bypassing Derby in that direction. And we'll see about, you know, where things are right now with Mandaloon and Essential Quality. And we'll have Steve Asmussen tell you where he stands with Midnight Bourbon. So there's the... There's the ones that we can affect immediately. King Fury, assuming everything goes well. You knew about Ron Bauer, obviously, who had also bypassed Derby for Preakness. And Chad Brown has been waiting with Crowded Trade, you know, trying to pull off a cloud computing scenario. And don't forget about Hideki Mori, right? Is it Hideki? It's very close to Hideki. Several of the letters in Hideki is involved in Mori's first name. France Godina, who was, I think, what, fourth or fifth in the UAE Derby. So right now, looking at about nine, potentially, for Preakness. And we'll obviously monitor as we get closer. And I'll text him. He certainly expected the call. All right. Let me let him know just in case. Yeah, just keep calling. All right. Good. So there's your Preakness update, and we'll keep an eye for any movement. A couple of notes, actually, that we didn't get to yesterday, and obviously we'll keep recapping some of the stake performances. But one performance that, among a few, actually, that need to be noted, the effort of Mask Parade. And Al Stahl with Miguel Mena was one of my favorites. That was impressive. And obviously, Mass Parade is going to be a player going forward. There were a few efforts, non-derby efforts that are going to resonate. But Mass Parade winning off by a dozen and getting a 97 buyer out of it. And Al Stahl, when I checked with him on Sunday morning, Al said that they'll stay home and, you know, take it slow for now and look toward the Matt Wynn at the end of the month. So Mask Parade, who has gone to the top of the class when it comes to upstarts. This is upstart's best son so far. And a couple of other efforts that Supremacy with Brad Cox. We'll ask about that one with him as well. And Cool House for Brad Cox, who broke the maiden. And that looked like a nice group. So the non-derby portion of the weekend. Ron Anderson joins us now. And Ron, first and foremost, you know, we had Johnny yesterday, and it's an amazing accomplishment for him, and his career resurgence seemingly can be, you know, led directly to your savvy. So congratulations to you on a big weekend, Johnny and Joel.
Well, thanks, Steve, and thanks for having me on.
I felt a couple different reasons, and obviously we'll talk about the overall results, but explain to everybody, Ron, what Joel told you about Rock Your World and losing that left iron and what transpired.
I think there's quite a few things that contributed to his foot sliding out. Part of it had to do with, I believe, the different gate situation, which is, you know, the stalls are slightly smaller. I think that started things because he kind of broke a little awkward. But then, Steve, I don't know if everybody saw it, but he got completely blasted from the outside and from the inside, and even the inside two horses, because the horse inside his horse on the inside slammed into the horse next to him. So the combination of everything, like Joel said, it all happened so fast that, you know, he was out the back. You have to have a lot of luck and a great gate horse to do what he was trying to do. He's a lightly raced horse, obviously. He's a big horse. That all contributed to, I think, him just not getting away very well. So you remember the wide world of sports. For me, it was the agony of that and the ecstasy of Johnny winning the race, of which I don't really recall a more popular win, maybe. Johnny, in our world, of which you and all of us are involved, is probably as highly respected a person, bar none. He is the consummate professional. He's revered by all other riders and people that he participates and competes with, and that was shown in the just, for me, amazing, amazing tribute to him on the gallop out for the Oaks on Friday. I mean, Irad Ortiz, who, you know, he's just a classy kid anyway, but for him to reach out, and I thought it was very fitting the way it was described as the teacher and the student. And the student, you know, doing what he did was just breathtaking to me. In the moment of getting beat in a, you know, grade one Oaks, a classic, for Irad to have that display of just raw emotion towards his mentor, friend, countryman was just, it was a special, special moment for sure.
Agreed. And we brought it up with Johnny yesterday, brought it up with Todd Pletcher too. And for some reason, there's some people saying, "Oh, it's a bad look." It's like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
It's just the craziest version of things I'd ever. I don't understand that sentiment. But anyway, Ron, back to Joel for a second. How quickly did his foot get back into that left iron? As you watch the head on, you do see him also reach to his right, almost a balance, it seems, himself. What did he say about getting right back into the iron? Because it didn't look like he was fighting to find the stirrup, for too long on the left.
I think what happened, Steve, was when he broke a little, what I call cattywampus, and he kind of broke to the left. By the time the horse on the right slammed, you know, when you blow your iron, if you could understand kind of being on a some sort of an apparatus or sitting on a rail, and if you go, your weight shifts left,
right,
obviously your weight comes off the right slightly. That might have been when he went to adjust, but Steve, it wouldn't have made any difference if the iron slipped or not. As hard as he got slammed, I mean, he's kind of lucky he didn't maybe come off, because that was brutal what happened on both sides. And that horse needed to get away from there for more than a few reasons, but mainly, if you think about it, he had never, quite seen dirt before in his face, which I knew. I was glad he drew outside. The 15 seemed like a real workable situation from out there. But I knew if he didn't get away good, you know, for years we've seen horses that just the race was over in basically two strides.
Agreed. And it obviously, there were a couple of different things between him not being involved in the pace at all. And actually, if you watch them up the stretch, he settles for, you know, for a few strides and then makes a steady advance to be, you know, essentially mid pack pretty quickly. And, you know, he ended up in a position where he didn't even lose too much ground, from what I could tell. I mean, he was 10th after, you know, at the quarter and at the half. So, you know, he found himself midfield, but that's not where Rock Your World was going to successfully contend from.
His demise at the break obviously helped Johnny's chance to win because, you know, really, really good riders, which I've obviously been fortunate enough to represent for years, they have a plan A, a plan B, and in a race of that stature, maybe even C and D. And Johnny knew leaving the gate when Joel didn't come rip-roaring up on the outside to take the lead, he knew that he was going to inherit the lead. And then, I mean, when was the last time you saw anybody ride the Derby any better than he did? I mean, it's just, you know, it's just mind-boggling. The experience, the feel for what was going on, the, you know, the professional ride that he put on that horse will go down in my mind as one of the very finest maybe ever. And then, you know, I'm at an age myself where I think at times, you know, how many more opportunities in these kind of races, you know, will I have? And Johnny had to think the same, coming off the Oaks win, huge, huge day. And then to come to the Derby and for him to win both races at this point. And he's, you know, some people in life and some riders and trainers and stuff, you really can't root for them. Everybody can root for John Velasquez on so many levels. So it's just a special weekend on a lot of accounts. And lucky enough, I'm involved. But Johnny's just he's just different. He's a different kind of person.
Well, and as you explained to us at the time, that, you know, when John Velasquez picks up the phone and and says, "Would you take my book?" As eager as you were to take him on, you also, you know, couldn't have been, you know, you even said so. You weren't happy to have to let Umberto Rispoli go. You know, that's something, frankly, we haven't talked about. The karma police, Ron, were out in force on Saturday night talking about Joel getting this mount and also about Rock Your World signing a stallion deal leading up. A lot of people consider that an absolute kiss-off when it comes to Derby chances.
Well, you know, I can't get into quite all that. The only thing that I told more than one person and reporter was the reason Joel ended up on John Sadler's horse was the number was 248. 248 wins John Sadler has had with Joel Rosario. And I don't know how many of those were Costa Hironas' horses, but
sure.
You know, they just felt more confident with Joel. And like I said to somebody else, there were so many things that had to happen for me to end up on that horse, including, you know, Doug O'Neill couldn't wait on Pratt.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
You know, the concert tour situation and all this other stuff. You know, sometimes you just end up where you're supposed to, and that's kind of where we were supposed to. Now, if you want to go into the karma of it all, well, so be it. But At the end of the day, we move and we live on.
No doubt, no doubt. From a race perspective, what else, not just on the feature, but what caught your attention as you watched the cards unfold the 2 days?
Well, spectacular 2 days of racing. Steve Asmussen's colt is just amazes me. If anybody watches that race and sees how fast that horse ended up, going with fractions, going a flat mile, and then for that horse to get hooked inside the eighth pole and being bound and determined to get to the wire, I mean, you talk about a special, special animal. That was just, mind-boggling, and raised the hair on the back of your neck. I won't forget that race for a very long time. Todd's filly winning the Oaks, she's something extremely special. I know he thinks that. I know Johnny thinks that. She's like something, out of the very ordinary. I think going to end up being one of the very elites when it's all said and done with her. And there was great turf racing. We got lucky with weather. The ground was exactly perfect, especially on Saturday. I was in Julian LaPrue's presence last night, and he was saying somebody in our circle had asked him about how was the ground, and he said it was perfect. So the weather was great. The crowd was great. The jubilation of Johnny coming back towards the grandstand to be there was quite magical. And then, one of my big highlights was seeing Leona run alongside the horse. Leona's Johnny's wife. Run alongside the horse, throwing her arms up in the air, much like a little kid. So special memories here.
Nah, it was really a what the doctor ordered start to the Triple Crown season, and I'll ask you the same reaction to what came up with Todd yesterday. You mentioned about the specialness of Malifat. Let's speculate here, and he talked about her giving serious consideration. He'll discuss with Rick Nichols in coming weeks about running her in the Belmont. And Medina Spirit is carrying a very strong Bob Baffert record on 2 week turnaround Derby to Preakness when it comes to Derby winners. What happens? What happens, Ron? How do you deal with this? Should Chadwell want to run Malifat in the Belmont and Medina Spirit wins next week?
This is deja vu all over again. As you being the student of the game that you are, I had a similar situation with a departed deceased rider of Garrett Gomez, where Rags to Riches won the Oaks and then ended up in the Belmont, which was, there were a lot of, sometimes it's not exact science. It's not ABC. Todd had told me, maybe 8 or 10 days in, that he didn't plan on running. And at that point, there was at least a couple horses open that were going to be, the choices in the race. And who's the horse? I ended up giving a call to,
In the Belmont, you mean?
In the Belmont, because Todd wasn't going to run. And he ended up, because ended a couple up, of them.
You ended up on Hardspun.
Hardspun, exactly. And Hardspun was, 4-1 in the race. And he he definitely was going to run, and Todd wasn't going to run. So Johnny ended up on Rags to Riches. So this kind of situation that could arise, we'd have to sit down and think. If you're going for a triple crown, you would think that's probably your preference, but who knows? I don't know. I have to just discuss it with Johnny and see where we would go. And we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. I never want to get too far ahead of myself. I don't think you can in any phase of this game. You could project all this, but at the end of the day, who knows whether they both show up or one of them shows up or what happens. So we're kind of focusing on the next game here, which the next game is going to be the Preakness, and we'll hope for the best there, and then we'll sit down and adjust from there, much like any kind of, coach or football team would do. We'll go from there. They're nice options to possibly have. Like Johnny was saying, that a lot of interviews the last couple of days, and I said to him, well, this is a great problem to have. So it's kind of the name of the game. You're doing well. Everybody wants a piece of you.
That's true. And you can really tell watching Johnny, how invigorated Ron, he appears, there was a period just a couple of years ago where it really looked like Johnny's interest, and by his own admission, it seemed that his interests were and desire had waned somewhat. He had a couple of serious incidents, injuries, and he looks like a new guy. It's amazing.
Well, any competitive sport, if you get on some of the right horses and you're able to have some success, or you're playing ball and you're winning, that'll invigorate anybody. And riding the kind of horses that we've been fortunate enough to get on, I'm sure he feels like he's 30 again. And I feel like I'm 30 again, too, just being able to participate in these, Super Bowl-type days. To win the Derby within, 8 months apart, to win two Derbies, win the Breeders' Cup Classic, win the Oaks. Here's the other thing. How about the fact that he was one of the three finalists for an Eclipse Award? That stuff will make you get out of bed and feel a lot younger, that's for sure.
Yeah,
we're on a really nice run, and Joel's on a super run, too. And I'm fortunate enough to be hooked up with two of the utmost professional, classy gentlemen in our business.
Now, and Ron, before we go, how many derbies, how many triple crown, what's your total after Saturday?
15 triple crowns, 6 derbies, and I think it's 37 Breeders' Cups, but I think they might have taken one. I think it might be 36. The mile and a half on Bailout Becky of Doug O'Neill's a few years ago. I've been told that that wasn't a Breeders'. That at the time, I was 100% sure it was, but I guess maybe it wasn't. So I'm thinking I'm at 36. That's kind of my proudest accomplishment, of which that and being with the love of my life for a long time is something that I hold very dear to my heart.
Well, Ron Anderson, everybody, an absolute legend when it comes to the jock agent trade, one of the most influential and successful and consistent of those that have done this. And Ron, congratulations! I appreciate you addressing what transpired. You know, people just, you know, they saw the picture, and I'm sure with Tony Black on Thursday, I'll let Tony. I didn't get a chance with Rich Migliore yesterday, but I'll let Tony riff on it and explain, you know, losing irons and you know, how it affects things. So we'll look forward to seeing you. I suppose the next big appearance. You've historically made a Belmont Week visit, so. We'll
look forward to seeing you over there.
Look forward to that. Yeah. Ron Anderson, everybody. And you can, I'm just, because I never remember precisely your, not that you're a huge Twitterer, but Ronald T54. If you want to follow Ron and want to congratulate him on successes like Saturday's. Ron, thank you.
Thank you, Stevie. Take care.
Ron Anderson, everybody. And you know, there's any number of things that will contribute to, you know, losing an iron. The gate, being brushed up against the gate, could knock it out. Understand, you know, the riders, Tony has explained this. Riders, their foot is not in that stirrup the way you and I ride a trail horse. You understand that, right? This is not a Western saddle. They have toes. Maybe a couple of inches. Maybe that's even a lot. That is on that stirrup bar. So getting banged by the gate, you know, coming out, you'll remember, if we go back to the Breeders' Cup coming down the hill, the turf sprint race at the Santa Anita a few years ago with Ohm. And as Gary Stevens explained, Ohm literally was trying to scrape Stevens off. The horse essentially dove into the gate, and, you know, the gate swings open and it rattles, you know, a little bit back and forth. And if the horse lurches in one direction or another, and you know, that is their want, you know, it's very easy to understand. I mean, the suggestion by people that, Rosario, how could he not be ready? What do you mean not be ready? You think that that he puts his foot in the stirrups, you know, right before the gate opens? They make that adjustment whenever you see a camera that is trained on the gate, you know, when they have that long shot, you can see the minute that the horse goes up to the, you know, up to the closed gates in front of them, the first thing you see is the riders, their shoulders, you know, dip down to both sides. They're you know, adjusting the stirrups and getting set. I mean, they don't wait until the latch gets sprung. As fast as it happens, it's going to be impossible to determine, you know, how much of it contributed to Rock Your World in not necessarily getting out ahead of the potential to get squeezed the way, you know, the way it happened, right? I mean, that you just can't know. He had highly motivated to his right, essential quality to his left, and they squeeze him. You know, the funny thing is that Malathat, as we discussed yesterday with Todd too, and with Ron, with John, she had the same incident and, you know, was able to recover as well and get forward enough, you know, where she was in the race flow and set up shop and be close enough. But rock your world, it ends up being a, you know, a devastating start to the race that prevented him. Casey's trying to reach Steve and is actually struggling. All right, Case, you know what? I will send Steve a text and you know what? Maybe we will be, you know what? Maybe we'll move him to later in the morning if it fits, because it's going to, there's little too much to talk about with him. But we could take him at 11. So that might work. Let's let him know. So give me a second. You know, I got to, I can sort of talk and text at the same time. It's not, not the easiest. There we go. All right. All right. Save it, Case, because there's only 6-7 minutes to the top, and Andy is going to join us at 10. So that'll be fine. All right. Well, he says he's available, Case. So why don't try him one more time? Maybe I don't know if it's. Yeah, try him one more time then. I'll tell him you're. All right, try. Yeah. This is how the sausage gets made, everybody. I won't launch into too much more. I could mention that Sunday, Joel Rosario came back and won the Ruffian with Vault on Sunday. And there's Steve, I think. Now, Steve, right? Is that Steve with us? Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
There we go. Steve, kiddingly said I couldn't congratulate you on the Pat Day win, even though I watched the race standing next to you, because you moved too fast out onto the racetrack.
I was excited.
That was unbelievable.
I just love that horse. Just very proud of him.
One of the things, I said this yesterday, one of the things that's very satisfying about races like that and the other turnbacks, you know, fillies at this time of year, is making a decision, trying the classic trail, recognizing your horse as a sprinter, one turn, middle distance, and then going for this kind of assignment.
I can't say enough, you know, about Kirk and Judy Robeson and taking the, you know, our shot in the Southwest. I think the circumstances couldn't have been any more against him going two turns as they were that day. And just, they defend, proud of their horse, defend the horse, and do what comes naturally to him. And have to go back to one turn.
I'm just going to speculate because, you know, we've had so many conversations about this kind of a horse with you, and of course Mitoli the violence, volatile from last year. This even the mile, Steve. It seems like you might even trim him back a little bit now too, right? To 7/8.
I think it's the opportunities. What a comfort it is to have races run at the time of year and when you expect them, as opposed to last year. Obviously, off the Pat Day mile, we will plan on nominating and would expect to be represented by him in the Woody Stevens. And then, obviously, with the success that he had at Saratoga as a two-year-old, the Alan Jerkins and races of that caliber. But we're obviously very excited to have him and think those races show his best talents.
Well, and now he's 5 for 7, and it's only the the juvenile and the Southwest that are non victories. And this though, the way he did it, you had to be just, I mean, agog like everybody else, Steve. When those splits went up, 21-3. A seemingly impossible 43-3 at 107-4. You had to think he was going to, get run down.
We didn't. when you're around a horse with the class and the ability of Jackie, you expect him to win. I mean, that's what you're standing there expecting. For him to have to do it that fast to have success is impressive on his part, but when a filly of Gamine's quality runs 7/8 in the race before in 21 and change, and his 7/8 fractions is 120.5, it's ability. I mean, that's the thing about time. It doesn't lie to you.
That's right, and that's right, and there's a lot of this. Everybody is so tickled by a very inexpensive horse winning the Derby. Well, this was a horse that was a $95,000 Keeneland Yearling.
Not anymore. I don't know how that's possible if you've ever seen Jackie's Warrior
right.
in person.
No doubt.
Circumstances create that, and he obviously, he's by a brilliantly fast horse, and he's a brilliantly fast horse.
And a brilliantly fast horse in McLean's Music at Hill and Dale that of course you trained and is getting horses like that, not just one turn either, horses that can win at any distance. And
he had a classic winner already.
Yeah. Well, cloud computing. So this was, as I tweeted, Steve, I said the Derby's going to have to be special, pretty special, to beat what we just had witnessed. I mean, it was thrilling, because when Dream Shake, really engaged, they really came at him. You thought, how can he keep going? But he did.
It was very, very exciting horse race. So proud of Jackie's Warrior's performance. Great win for Kirk and Judy Robeson, and to have so much, the whole family there, and for us to celebrate that victory was very special.
Really, Steve, a solid weekend overall. I mean, let's touch on some of the other performances. Lots of board hits, including Finite in the Grade One on Friday. Talk about the fillies too on Friday, and your thoughts on how that race unfolded for Clairiere and Pauline's Pearl.
Just a excellent running of the Oaks. Both we're very fortunate to have Pauline's Pearl and Clairiere. Came out of the races, out of the Oaks, in very good shape, and I think both fillies will finish off the year strongly, and it's get back to work and find the right spots.
Fair enough. And then on Saturday, one of the things that I think people probably hadn't even necessarily noticed, Whiskey Double came running and picked up a very nice placement behind Jackie and Dream Shake.
Yes, his last three runs have been solid. He had a nice allowance victory at Oaklawn, the second in the Bay Shore, and then the third in the Pat Day Mile. He is a very nice horse, gorgeous, that is coming along very well. Carries a big horse, carries a lot of weight, and he has improved with his races.
He's Ron Winchell's, and was a pricey yearling, $875,000 into mischief out of Munnings mare, Buck Pond farm bred, and now back-to-back graded stake placements. And I guess the Into Mischief Munnings feels like the middle distance and the elongated sprints, 7/8 to a mile, New York extended one turn.
Looking at the calendar and speaking with Ron and David Smith, I felt that the Dwyer might suit him perfectly.
Nice. Nice. Let me note that down. Beautiful. Whiskey double. That gets us to Derby, Steve. And one of the parts of the postscript and the deep dive analysis, Midnight Bourbon, after a little bit of a slow start, really was not where I'm sure you hoped he would have been early. But then he did put in the sustained run and probably ran one of the really good hidden races within the Derby.
Yeah. the walkover for the Derby is as exciting as it can get, and the walk back from it can be very long. But he came out of it in very good shape. He is a tremendous physical, very strong horse right now, and just trying to evaluate where we're at and make the right move with him. He is still under consideration for the Preakness, obviously, and I thought that the trackest numbers of his race were, very interesting.
And there's quite a few people that are already salivating, hoping that you come to Baltimore with him.
Yeah, for him to, I think 24-3 his last quarter, the Derby is. I think his first quarter was 23-70, and his last one was 24-50 something. That's beautifully steady at a pretty good rate of speed under extreme circumstances.
He very much so, and if they run that Derby, Steve, a few different times, and some of the things that happen, obviously the Rock Your World, they just got off. Ron Anderson was just with us, and we talked about Rock Your World, being basically taken out early. You run this race a few times more, and Midnight Bourbon probably wins a couple of them.
It's obviously it is the race that has eluded us, and this is another example of it doing the same. But obviously, being in horse racing, being horsemen, we're not smart enough to give up. We'll try again.
Steve, how about the family, the house horse with the Superstock? How does that shake out? What are your thoughts going forward with him?
Oh, obviously, Superstock and the thrill that he gave the family in the Arkansas Derby, and just how beautiful it is. It was leading up to the Kentucky Derby, and we just had such a great weekend with the family and mom and dad and mother-in-law and sister like Julie and the boys and Cash and his girls and stuff. It's truly amazing what a horse can do for you. And he came out of the race in very good shape, and we are going to target the Lone Star Derby with him, which runs May 31st. And obviously very fortunate to have him to run in a race of that caliber.
Very nice. And you had to be, you had to be really touched, I imagine. Your dad was really a focus all Derby week, and for him to get a chance to be in that kind of spotlight, everybody within the industry knows.
As great as it was to win the Arkansas Derby and to get to run a horse for my parents as well as Irv Woolsey in the Kentucky Derby, how people's response to mom and dad and.
Yeah.
the well wishers and just how heartfelt it was has been impossible to describe how much it means to me.
Well, and that's been evident these whole 3 weeks, you know, since Hot Springs, and of course the meet wrapped up. You had a great Oaklawn season. The calendar, right?
Yeah, but definitely shed a tear that the Oaklawn meet is over. That's for sure.
Well, it's not like you won't make hay at Lone Star either. I see plenty of entries going at Lone Star right now too. So
obviously very happy with how things are going with Texas Racing right now, and it feels like they've got things headed in the right direction. And glad to be represented there and have horses to run, because the racing's getting very competitive.
Finally, Steve, there's a couple of options today. I've already received a couple of notes from people. They're looking for one of those Asmussen windows.
I love Country Time at Indiana. They've not made a call yet on whether we're on the turf or not, but we need to be on the turf, and we're all in on Country Final today.
I love it.
Country Time.
For Jeff Bloom. I saw Jeff on Saturday.
Yes, absolutely. So we're just got our fingers crossed that we stay on the turf at Indiana today, because we sure like that one.
I love it. It's a clever name too that Jeff came up with, because it's a lemon drop kid. So I get the Country Time lemonade reference. Very good.
Yep.
I love it, Steve. Well done, and I'm sure we'll see. You know, there'll be things in Baltimore whether Midnight Bourbon comes or not, and I appreciate it as always.
Oh, thank you. What a great week of racing, and it was so good to 50,000 in attendance.
Yep.
And you don't realize how much of that excitement you miss until you have to go without it.
Perfectly said. And I think that's why there was such a gleeful atmosphere. As much or more so than usual. Really, really well put, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Steve Asmussen, everybody, and Jackie's Warrior with one of the most amazing performances of the weekend or in recent memory. Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Andy had a chance to take in his first Derby. What did you think?
I think it's amazing that I actually saw you. It was a very rare time at the track where I actually saw you. Normally you come to, now that I really think about it, I don't think it had anything to do with me. I think that you wanted to be seen around people I was with, because you come to the track in New York all the time. I never see you. So I'm thinking that there's some story you're just not telling.
I'm gonna go out on the limb and say to everybody that Andy had a fabulous time coming to his first Oaks Derby weekend.
I mean, you spoiled it a little bit, but you had a trip each day. I feel like I played Friday and Saturday. Well, Saturday you were sucking up to somebody else who happened to be near me, so you were worried that I had seen you, so you came over to where I was. I hadn't seen you actually. You could have gotten by without seeing me. You could have skirted that one.
Well, see, I'm going to let you.
Come on.
You can beat up on me all you want.
I did have a good time. It was really fun. No, it was. I had a great time. The weather was great. You know, I mean, I don't know if it, you know, was just dramatically more crowded, if it would have been tougher, but as it was, no, it was a really fun time. No question about it. Thoroughly enjoyed myself.
We'll hit a couple of reviews. I mean, obviously, when you know, and you have a rooting interest on Friday when it came to search results, and that was about as thrilling a race as you're gonna, you know, be treated to.
It was a great race. I agree, and you're a deserving winner, no question about it. I think both Malathot and Third Search results ran very well. Malathot was a little bit better. She had a slightly wider trip, nothing significant, but not an easier trip. Both of them had decent trips. I mean, if anything, I think that Malathot and John Velasquez, the fact that, you know, she's a horse that, you know, is able to fight her way in a little traffic, and when she broke a step slow, she was really in danger of getting pinched, and Johnny forced her through sort of the contact, and because of his adeptness and her talents, she was able to get position from there. If he had not done that, she would never have won. She probably wouldn't have hit the board. And that, you know, a lot of credit goes to, obviously, all the credit goes to the horses, but Johnny's the ride was as good as it gets. And the fact that he, in a split second, realized he was faced with a situation that if he didn't act, it was going to be extremely detrimental, and that made it all the difference in the world, really. And so, you know, after that, they both had clean trips, and the better horse won. It was a very close race, and I'm sure if they ran it five times, it wouldn't always be that order of finish, but I mean, there are narrow defeats that are tougher to swallow than other ones, and that really wasn't one. I mean, it's frustrating. You want to win, but when the day is over, Search Results ran great. She just didn't run as well as the winner did, and the winner was a deserving winner. It was an excellent race between the two of them. It's extremely thrilling, and, you know, from my perspective, it was very, very exciting. So, yeah, that was great. And listen, Saturday, as far as, you know, horses I was rooting for my friends in domestic spending, who ran the better race? I mean, I don't think there's anybody out there that thinks that Colonel Liam ran the better race of the two horses. He projected to get a good trip. You can't ever assume horses are going to get as unbelievably dreamish situation as he gets. And for domestic spending to have fought through, and, you know, when Colonel Liam and the other leader were drifting, Smooth Like Straight were drifting in the stretch, and he had to sort of alter course to go around them and hurt his momentum a little bit as well. It was a remarkable performance for him to get up and win in a dead heat. Not a knock on Colonel Liam. He's a very, very good horse. He's having a great year, but domestic spending, I don't think there's anybody out there that doesn't realize he ran the better race of the two. And I look forward to the two of them hopefully meeting in Manhattan. I know Todd had said some things in your show yesterday about looking at dirt down the road, and you can't blame him. I mean, if he could find a way to win a race like either the Whitney or the Jockey Club Gold Cup with him, what it would do for his value would be extraordinary. So that makes perfect sense in doing that. Obviously, domestic spending at Kingman's going to stick to the turf. But, I mean, it bodes well for his rest of his year. And you know, so all those were great. And there were a lot of good performances during the day. I really didn't bet a lot during the day. I didn't have any opinion. The races were extremely competitive both days. I bet very, very little. I was glad to see Jackie's Warrior get back to his good form. Both he and Dream Shake ran terrific races. That was an excellent battle between those two. I don't think the Gamine we saw is the Gamine that we've seen in the past, and whether or not it's just these situations with these tepid paces that she's not able to sort of strut her stuff, I think that's probably a big factor in it. You know, she's getting it done because she's so much better than them, but I don't think anybody's confusing her two performances in 2021 or his performances last year. You know, I hope they're still, I know there's been talk of them coming for the Phipps. I hope they still are. I'd love to see her in that race. So she was good. You know, and otherwise, it was just a fun day all around. And obviously, there's a lot to say about the Derby.
And much like my conversation yesterday with Andy Beyer, got to congratulate Andy on his tab of Medina Spirit, and you also latched on.
I think Andy's liked the Derby winner since I've liked one. Silver Charm. I actually bet Fu Peg 2-1. I didn't bet against him, but I don't believe I've won a bet on the Derby since Fu Peg at the latest. So I don't think a 12-1 shot makes up for all that.
That doesn't hurt.
Given I've only been at NIRA now for 12 or 13 years, I get about even for that. It worked out. I don't, you know, the Derby's a bit of a crapshoot. I think with Medina Spirit, to me, he was an obvious pick, win or lose. A horse that was against the track last time. A horse that had run a very, very strong race. As far as I was concerned, his win, the Robert Lewis, was the single best prep race win outside of Life is Good that we saw all year. He was running, you know, he ran in the San Diego Derby. Rock Your World had all the best of it being on the inside, and he chased wide. He's not a horse that showed an ability to pass horses, but he's a horse who's shown that he's a fighter on the front end. And when you have Bob Apper training him, it's not hard to be confident that he's going to send him the lead. Doesn't mean he's going to be good enough to win, but Bob Baffert has shown throughout his career that he's not afraid to send horses to the front. And he's not afraid to end up losing because he may have done that. So he ended up getting it done. There's not much more to say about it. He's always, you know, I don't think anybody that didn't realize that he had a lot of talent, I don't think was paying a lot of attention. You know, if you want to go through the other horses, Essential Quality kind of lost for all the reasons you were supposed to bet against him.
Right.
Right. The horse that had gotten absolute perfect setups and great trips in every single one of his races. And yes, a lot of it's due to his trackability and his adaptability. But the reality is you can't assume that's going to keep happening, and the race that's least likely to keep happening is the Kentucky Derby. He was a little wide. I think a lot, way too much being made of these Trackus numbers, as though every foot that you're wider in Trackus somehow corresponds to a horse foot. You know, that's just not true. And those of us looked at Trackus over the years, no, it's not. Not to say he didn't run very well, and he didn't run, you know, a comp full race to the winner, but you knew he drew wide. You knew he figured to be wide. He broke a fraction slow. The start didn't really affect him. What really happened at the start was that, and we'll get to Rocky World, but Rocky World, when he broke a step slow, Javier, highly motivated, was outside of him, realized very adeptly that, oh, a major contender is breaking slow inside of me. I'm going to shut the door. And he came in. I think that Essential Quality came out maybe a smidgen as well, but mostly it was Javier sensing an opportunity to put a real rival into some jeopardy. And that's race riding. He didn't do anything wrong. That's, you wish the riders had been more often. You know, take advantage of that situation where a rival breaks a bit slow. And in this case, I don't think that really affected Essential Quality. Maybe he broke a fraction slow, but I don't think that he was anywhere different than where he was going to be. He wasn't going to be a speed. He was a little wide, but not so much so that it was dramatically surprising or affected him. He ran his race, a good horse. He could certainly reverse decisions with these horses later, but at a relatively short price in the big field, he was vulnerable because everything has gone his own way and he'd never run that big thing. Well, he didn't run again. Probably ran one of his better races, but he never really had a real advantage in these horses from a speed figure standpoint anyhow. Hot Rod Charlie seemed to run very well in there. Overall, he had a pretty good trip. He's another horse, if you think about Hot Rod Charlie, something I talked about beforehand, the best races he had run were on the front end. He didn't project to be the speed in this race. And he had a chance and gotten a perfect trip, albeit in his first start as a three-year-old, behind Medina Spirit, when Medina Spirit cut a fast pace, and he still couldn't run him down. Similar happened here. I think the pace was obviously much faster than Robert Lewis than it was in this Derby in relative terms, but he's a horse, Hot Rod Charlie, that I would be a little concerned with his ability to win these races passing horses. Not to say it can't happen, it won't happen, but I think that was a legitimate concern going into the race. Mandaloon was the horse that bounced back a great deal. People are saying he bled in the Louisiana Derby. I don't have any proof that he did. I don't know that he did. It's interesting that after the race, people said he bled in the Louisiana Derby. All the talk before the race was nobody knew why he ran bad in the Louisiana Derby. So whether or not he did, I don't know. To me, that's just conjecture. Whatever the case was, he ran back close to that effort he put forth in the Risen Star. That's not an impossibility, but one that I wasn't interested in following. Didn't like him at all. And he ran a lot better than I thought he would. As far as Rockier World, he had one dirt race where he got a dream trip. He didn't rate to get in the Derby, and he didn't rate to make the lead. Even if he had broken cleanly, he wasn't going to be in front of Medina Spirit. Bob Baffert wasn't letting that happen, neither were John Velasquez. Maybe they would have gone faster, maybe would have burned them up. But I don't really believe that was the case, and his connections even said they didn't feel they had to go to the lead. So, yes. He got an unoptimal situation when he broke a bit slow and the door was shut. Having said that, the concern with him was he was a grass horse that, despite all the talk of him being pointed for San Diego Derby and leaving $1 million on the table, all along, he never had dirt kicked in his face. He never faced any adversity. He was dreadful in the Derby. He didn't run a step. Yes, he had trouble to start, but my gosh, he could have managed to move somewhere. I mean, he just had absolutely nothing. And I know there's a narrative out there about Joel Rosario apparently not having his feet in the irons. Well, we don't know where they were in the gate. My guess is that they were in the irons in the gate.
Yes.
I'm certainly happy to ask Joel about it, and I'm sure he'd be forthcoming to me about it. But The reality is that I did ask another rider, and he said that the gate is extremely tight. When I asked about Joel and his irons, he said that gate is extremely tight. So the likely event was that something happened in him coming out that took Joel's foot out of the iron. Joel Rosario is one of the best riders in the world, and it's not as though he has a history of having his feet not in the iron. So this narrative out there on Twitter and on social media and stuff, I don't believe it. I'm happy to ask Joel about it, but I highly doubt that Joel was sitting on Rock Your World on his cell phone and forgot to put his feet in the irons. So I'm not going to buy that. The reality is the horse didn't run. Yeah, he had trouble at the start. And certainly an excuse, no doubt. But he did no running thereafter. Known agenda. The rail had zero. Drawing the rail had zero to do with his performance. Just watch the race. IRAD does a tremendous job of getting him out of the gate and getting him forward. But IRAD can't wave a magic wand and transform a slow horse early into a fast horse early. And if you look at the time form pace projector, he was exactly where the pace projector expected him to be. It's very similar to this crazy notion about Zenyatta supposedly not handling the track at Churchill, because she was exactly where she was projected to be based on the pace figures. Something I had actually said on your show, where one person who embarrassed himself for life insulted me on another radio program because of it. That she, you know, when one of your guests was suggesting that she would be in front, I said she'll be a city block behind the horse early. She was. That's where Known Agenda figured to be, and that's where he was. He didn't get shuffled back. He sort of shuffled himself back. He's not fast enough to keep up.
Right.
He never ran a step. Is it possible if he got outside in the clear to make a run, he would have run a little better? I don't know. He didn't run a step. I'm still not going to say it precludes him from coming back into Belmont and running very well. Given Todd Fletcher's record in the Belmont Stakes, when he runs them, you have to respect them. So, and he's not a bad horse, Known Agenda, but he did not run a step in the Derby, and this rail draw had absolutely nothing to do with it. I don't know who else to cover. I know Keep Me In Mind, a lot of people thought he made a big run. I didn't see it. I thought David Cohen gave him an exceptional ride. He got him right to the fence for the first turn. He stayed inside as long as he could into the second turn, and he gradually eased him out. And some people were saying he was 8 wide. Yeah, he was 8 wide the last maybe 25% of the turn he was wide. But it was one of these swing out wides at unseen trackers, but I highly doubt he covered a significant amount of ground. I'm sure he covered a lot less than the Central Quality, for instance. I'm not sure I didn't see it, but I doubt he did. And yeah, he picked some pieces. No question, Keep Me In Mind ran a lot better than I thought he was capable of running. You know I'm not a fan of his. But he may have just been sort of the last man standing, the one closer who'd gotten this great ride from David Cohen, and nobody else were running the stretch, and he was picking up some pieces. He didn't even get by Midnight Bourbon. I thought Midnight Bourbon, I think Mike Smith tried to motivate him out of the gate. He didn't have that split second speed. And when that happened, he kind of got shuffled a little bit, and Mike realized, I can't rush him now. And he kind of just let him settle into stride. And he made an insignificant little run in the race. He's a nice horse, Midnight Bourbon. He always shows up with some kind of effort, but he didn't do any real running in this race. That's not to say in a race where he's able to be more forward, he won't give a better account of himself, but I don't think he did any real running in there. And I wish he ran second.
I hear you.
That's about all I have to say. I mean, I'm certainly happy to answer any questions, but I just thought that was, to me, there weren't a lot of trips in this Derby. I know people are always looking for them, but I didn't think there really were a lot of real trips in this race. The Derby's always a race where a lot of horses don't show up, right?
It is. And really the dialogue that really started a couple of weeks ago when the serious discussions began, and in fact, Gary Young is going to join us next, and Gary, you know, started our coverage the week before.
Didn't Gary pick out Medina Spirit?
Yeah. So we're going to have fun. You know, a fun recap with him. But as he said, he said this race, basically there's six candidates that are the likeliest winners, and he couldn't have been more right. I mean, all the horses that appeared to be your logical.
Well, I didn't think the second place finish was one of them, certainly the third.
No, he didn't. He didn't either. I mean, Mandaloon was a referendum horse. You had to make a stand.
I agree with Gary. I thought there were about six legitimate candidates in here, and the one, three, and four were certainly three of them. And I think in that case, it was very Medea's here was a very easy pick for me. Honestly, when Nick Tamaro put the piece together about 2 weeks ago, or 2 weeks before the race, he was my pick. I mean, it was to me. I went through. I watched some races. I didn't really need to watch many races. I had seen them so many times. I didn't do that much work on this Derby, and it's very easy for me. He was wide against the Gold Rail. Those are the horses I bet all year long. And once again, as I've said a lot of times, for better or for worse, I don't handicap the Derby any differently than I handicap a regular race.
Right.
Give me a horse that's a nice price that was wide against the Gold Rail, especially a race he was favored in, and the horse that enjoyed the best of trips and could end up being a significant fraction of his price. And you also had a race, the Derby, that had an extraordinarily vulnerable favorite in Essential Quality. A good horse, not a bad horse by any stretch of the imagination, a really good horse, but one that was extraordinarily vulnerable. And he lost for exactly the reasons we thought, right? He wasn't really any better than anybody, and he'd be getting great trips. He wasn't going to keep getting great trips. He may have ended up 3-year-old champion by the end of the year. It wouldn't shock me. But you know, he's got some very good trips, and those trips aren't going to continue to be perfect, especially in the Kentucky Derby. I don't want to bet the favorite hoping he gets the perfect trip.
Well, especially.
I'm hoping we get a perfect trip, but I'm not betting the favorite at that.
We're going to have a follow-up discussion with Jay Pribman at the end of the week about what is becoming, you know, really a portion of the Derby's current makeup, which is you better be in the first flight. It seems like, you know, we're now into a regular rote about approaching this race.
Well, that's because of the point system.
Yeah.
Because we've taken the sprinters out of the Derby, period. I mean, the answer for that's very simple, and I don't think anybody's surprised by that. And I mean, there could have been a different pace scenario, right? And there's a theory where if Midnight Bourbon had been more aggressive as a horse, I don't blame Mike. I mean, he tried to get him out, do what he could, right? And you know, let's say that Rock Your World had been broken cleanly and had been sent. There are scenarios in the pace, because the pace was quick, but it wasn't a fast pace. It was probably probably on the quick side of fast, but I don't think it was that racetrack for these horses. They're moving a bit. I more or less think that, you know, it's dirt racing. Being forward is an advantage. And when you take out the no-shot sprinters, it changes the dynamic of the race. And the fact is, a lot of the best horses have been forward. You know, the last Derby Belltown was 13, right? Was 13 or was that 14?
It was, I'm not sure. I can check easily.
I mean, that was the end, right? That was the end of the Derby meltdowns.
Actually, I got it right here. Where the hell did it go? Where is he? Where is Orb? Oh, that's Belmont. It's the Belmont. That's from yesterday with
you must be heading down to Pimlico, like right after the show today.
No, not yet. You're so ridiculous. What, Andy,
you
a couple
your
of...
bad pass and waiting by the door?
Well, Tina will be tired of me by about Thursday or Friday.
She's already tired. You know, I hate to be the one to break the news to you.
A couple of races I want to get your before I bring up a New York topic. A couple of other races that haven't really been discussed much yet. That crazy Churchill Downs, the Grade One, where Flagstaff eventually is not handed the race, but eventually emerges. There were six different winners in the final 100 yards.
That was one of the most epic hang performances by an Eclipse Award-winning champion in the history of horse racing. Whitmore's hang in that race should go in the Hall of Fame of hang. I refrain. My friend needed Whitmore, and I almost said to him, "The yards, well, it's over." and I laughed. I said to him afterwards, I said, "I was about to call you home with 50 yards to go." Well, that was a funny race, right? Because it would have been about a six-horse field if Charlatan had run. And when Charlatan didn't run, people started flying in from all over the country to run the race. $500,000 Grade One with no particularly good horses in it. A lot of nice horses, but, you know, I don't think it was ever going to be confused with a group of world beaters. There were just no super fast horses in there. And as much as we respect Whitmore, it's not like his DPs are littered by super fast races. It was an entertaining race, no doubt about it. But I wouldn't do cartwheels about any of them. They're a nice group of horses, but when you're running mid-90 buyers and Grade One stakes for older horses, let's not get too carried away. It was just an entertaining race, not a. And then plus, I'm a neat horse. I'm not knocking them. Just like Whitmore's a really neat horse, but they're never going to be confused. You know, it's like people said to me that Whitmore should be an all-time great. And it's craziness. I mean, it's just lunacy. People mistake in winning races. They mistake winning a Breeders' Cup race for some sort of coronation of greatness. And meanwhile, Kona Gold can't get into the Hall of Fame. And if you put Kona Gold's PPs next to Whitmore, a lot of people would go, oh, wow. Okay, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not knocking Whitmore. He's a really, really admirable, terrific horse. The fact that he stayed around so long and he held his form for so long is wonderful. He shows up in all these spots. He's everything you could want from a racehorse, but that doesn't make him an all-time great. They're different discussions. You know, we've seen Groovy. Even Artax, who was a tremendously fast horse. Midnight Loop. You know, these horses on their days ran gigantic speed figures. Being an all-time great is sure it's about longevity, and there's a credit for that, and, you know, showing up in all these things, but you've got to also run great races on a number of occasions. It's something he's never done.
Andy, one race I haven't addressed at all yet was a blowouts performance in that Distaff Turf Mile, and that's being underappreciated.
Well, blowouts probably a little underappreciated because it's a miracle that she had never won a Grade Stake, right? She's something like 9 for 13 coming. She had some remarkable record coming in, right? But she hadn't won Graded Stakes. She'd run ungraded stakes. And then Graded Stakes, she took one tough beat after another, including last year's Matriarch. When we were sitting there, and I saw that Kirk Wyckoff, the Three Diamonds horse, the sprinter, was running with Belmont on Friday. I said to Chad, oh, the Southern Speed in Blowout's race is running at Belmont. That's great. And he said, I worry that, you know, that Blowout's a better horse if she has a target, if she's, you know, stalking another horse. But obviously in those conditions, she had to go to lead. And it was a really odd race because it looked like she was running off, but the fractions were slow. And the field got to her like they were going to swallow her up top of the stretch, but she fought along. And, you know, let's give a little love to Flavian Pratt. What do you have, 5 starters, 3 wins, the second, the third in stake races over the weekend?
Yeah, yep.
He gave her a terrific ride. He gave Domestic Spending a terrific ride. And
the Baffert turf winner.
Yeah, that horse got some trick, my God. It was a tremendous ride. I was glad for, you know, I'm friendly with Peter Brandt, so I was happy to see Peter win. And Chad obviously as well with Blowout. That was a horse Blowout where 15 years ago she'd have paid 9 and change. But bettors are so much more sophisticated now and understand that she was the main speed. Now, obviously, with Gus Stormy not showing up and running at all, it changed the complexion of the race a little bit. She just didn't have any run at all. Sort of got there top of the stretch and then just kind of didn't put in any kind of run. But Blas always been a good horse. He run a lot of good races, and maybe one of those things you say, well, she got a well-deserved graded win because she's run well enough to have won a number of graded stakes and been unlucky in a number of them as well. And this one, she got more fortunate dynamics, for sure.
I'm gonna ask you about one more and from the weekend that... almost, yes. You talk about, you know, the savvy betting on Friday. There were so many smart pundits, including we had Nick Tamro, we had Marcus
Nick's
Hirsch, we
smart.
Had
Nick just sounds smart.
Well, and also James Scully.
Kidding.
All three explained why Obligatory was a great play in that 8 Bells. And
smarter than me.
16-1.
Last time.
Yeah, $35. And it's funny. I I was quite willing to believe the day out of the office was going to run an A race, and boy, she really did off a layoff.
I was against her, you know. Horses that have been entered a lot of times, and finally showing up. They don't have a good history. Boy, did she run well. I imagine Tim Ham is going to the Acorn with her next, and she'll be tough.
I was happy. I tell you what, even in defeat, I haven't talked to Tim, but even in defeat, I'm sure he's pleased because...
I'm sure he's frustrated loss, but she ran great. I had to be happy with how she ran. No, she ran great. I couldn't agree more. She was one of the ones that ran a winning race in defeat this weekend. She really ran well, especially when you consider the layoff and, you know, missing spots she was supposed to run in. She's a really good horse.
Andy, finally, if I know you, you've already caught up on what went on in New York over the weekend.
My track trends are up. I don't know. You could have looked.
I'm also.
I don't know. I didn't look. Maybe I could have been.
New York traffic with a big performance. You also had Todd bring back Dr. Post in the Westchester. I talked to him yesterday about it, and he looks like suddenly jumped in at the quarter pole with a 103 buyer. This Tribuven, the one, the Ford Marcy, at a nice price for Jad.
Yeah, I know.
10-1.
Yeah, no, he wired the field. He was the rabbit. I got to run Impact with Manhattan, right? And again, right?
Why not?
Yeah, the track trends are up. I'm looking at our crack team that got him right up. well. I mean, I didn't pay him attention to races, and I haven't watched Dr. Post yet, but obviously he came back with a nice effort. And as you said, Tribuven sort of out of nowhere ran that big race. I mean, Chad tried to get him into I think now was a 3 or optional 80 or something before that didn't fill. But he ran a big race, you know, whether or not he'll be able to back it up against tougher horses. Obviously, that remains to be seen. And Magic Attitude ran big, I guess.
Yes, for Arnaud Delacour.
I think it's the $7 million New York handicap, right? I think it's the biggest purse in America this year, right? Is it a World Cup? Is it the New York World Cup?
Yeah, it's
funny you have to pretend it is to call it a World Cup.
We should mention
need a World Cup. You know, we need a World Cup. We've got championship meets every month, but what about World Cup? We need a World Cup.
So ridiculous.
I'm gonna talk to Martin. I want a World Cup.
Let me slip in that it's a big day Saturday in New York. We're looking forward to the Bogey, the Man of War, the Peter Pan, the Run Happy, and the Vagrancy.
You coming down?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm. One thing is for certain. I am out of. Travel shape. I'm a little bogey.
I mean, you did. You know, in spite of everything, you really did look good this weekend. So I wouldn't.
Thank you. Andy Serling, everybody, and they're already saying on Twitter you should be gloating more, not less. That you should be. Bill Petty just said that.
Should I gloat about my bad picks?
No.
I certainly have plenty of them in the Derby.
Well,
I appreciate all the kind words from people, but I don't gloat about winners just as I don't gloat about losers.
Nice.
I got a lot more of them than I have winners.
That's the game. That's part of the game, no doubt. Andy, well done. I'm glad you had fun.
Dumb when you lose.
That's
dumb
right.
Myself more often than I'm smart. See you later, Steve.
Thank you. Andy Serling, everybody. And I can attest, I was sitting two boxes over from him, he really enjoyed his first Derby experience in Oaks. Let's take our only break of the morning because it's mayhem when we recap, and somebody else gets to gloat. Gary Young, bloodstock agent to the stars. We had the jock agent to the stars with Ron Anderson, and now Gary Young, one of the most well-liked of clockers and bloodstock agent types. He's next to talk about putting every bad beat he's ever been a part of away forever, winning the Kentucky Derby. Back after this, Gary joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9000. 938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve.